Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
Sirius XM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and you know, one of the reasons I in addition to the two stakes at Indiana, because we did, you know, we had stakes last week with Bill Downs. But did you watch Indiana yesterday? I was waiting for our race. We had, as I was getting off the air yesterday, I mentioned that they had come off the turf in Philly for no reason that anybody could have figured out. It didn't rain. They'd been off the day before on Monday, but it was very strange. They told Gary and Paul, well, it was misting in the morning. Okay. But they so they ended up taking the race off. We had shipped at 5 a.m. So we were already there. And so, you know, Gary sent me a note. He said, it's off the turf. I said, all right, you know, yeah. So Kid Chocolate ran. He ran okay. It's fine. He finished fourth, you know, beating a dozen. He just is not a dirt horse. It's funny. He can get over a wet track, you know, because particularly a sealed wet track, that turf horse, you know, turf horses, I've explained this over the years. The reason horses prefer, you know, different kinds of footing is because of their hoof construction and angle and pastern and their whole, you know, the whole frankly impossible mechanism that's involved. Because horses on the dirt, their hoof slide when they hit the dirt. They're sliding. And then they do what's called breakover, where the hoof goes, you know, starts to go backwards, and the ankle, you know, and they flick. But they're sliding, those horses. And horses that prefer the turf, on the turf, their hoofs stick onto the ground. They don't slide. And if I haven't mentioned this over in you know, recent past, horses have, you know, they're flight animals. They have one fear that's instilled in them. That is falling down. Horses obviously have, you know, the ability to run away from, in the wild, to run away from foes and predators, like mountain lions, cougars. They know if they fall, it takes them, you know, you ever watch a horse get up, it's, you know, it's like watching your grandpa. It's a whole mechanism. So they're susceptible if they fall. So the footing, one of the reasons that horses don't necessarily put out, you know, there are other factors, including kickback, which, you know, which also can work into their, you know, their reticence about going all out. But a horse goes all out and runs with abandon if they're comfortable with the footing. So that's why when there's horses on dirt and they're learning and they're working out, if they're not comfortable sliding that way as part of their gait and their motion over a surface, they're not going to extend themselves. And those are horses you then take and try on the grass or synthetic, because their hooves will not slide, and now their security factor and their comfort level is increased, and that's a big part of what goes on with horses and predilections for surfaces. And also why there's certain dirt tracks. I stopped years ago trying to explain this to Andy, who gives me a fight every time I bring it up. But, you know, there's racetracks that their composition may have more silt than clay or more clay. And obviously the way in which those dirt compositions, the way that horse gets over them, that, you know, that is why certain horses move up on certain surfaces. Same thing is also true on a wet track, when and why turf horses can frequently do okay on a wet surface if it's the type of particularly a sealed slop where there is that same composition where a horse can set in and not slide. If it's a sea of slop where, you know, especially horses with big hooves will slide, you know, it's like a surfboard essentially, you're not going to see them put out on a race that comes from off the turf. But Kid Chocolate's funny because he's been okay on a wet track. In fact, he won a race on a wet track, and I didn't win a race on a wet track. He was third, I think, going back to a race at an aqueduct, maybe, as a 3-year-old. But on dry dirt, in fact, if you want to see something that you can really, that's really evident, when you hear a horseman talk about a starter that was climbing on a surface. If you watch the replay from yesterday's sixth with Kid Chocolate, especially down the stretch when he comes into picture, there were three horses that pretty much were 1, 2, 3 all the way around, and Kid, he didn't break great, and Vargas let him settle, and then he came with a nice run. He actually had the fastest second quarter of anybody. But you can really see it at the end of the race. He comes back into the picture as he's finishing nicely. And you'll see exactly what they mean when they talk about a horse climbing. The knees are kind of going up, and it's sort of like a... It's not a comfortable gait. It's a, you know, it's sort of a motion where that you could imagine somebody climbing up a ladder. It's that kind of awkward high knee action, you know, coming straight down. And again, it all has to do with the footing and their comfort level. I pull that out about once a year. For those that are interested. But a kid, you know, a decent fourth yesterday. It was a good day of racing at Philly. So all of this to say that I was sitting waiting for our race, and at the same time the races are coming by at Indiana, and I hadn't looked at them going in, but I was just kind of following along. So the pick five yesterday, you had one tough horse. You had a 20-1 winner, and there's that Alex Achard, and Alex off of his graded stake win, his grade one win for Paulo Lobo at Keeneland. And he brought around a horse for Donna Riley and Carter Riley. And this is a homebred optimizer gelding, Indigo Rich. 20-1 beats the 3-5 favorite of Asmussen's. And that was the key to the pick five, because other than that, it was pretty mundane. You had I'm a Barrel Racer win at 9-2 for Gary Patrick, who was the, I think, third choice. Yep, third choice. Beat a 2-1 favorite of Ray Paquette's. Then you had an even money favorite, 6-5 favorite, win for Asmussen. This was Jeff Bloom's Country Time, that the Lemon Drop Kid. So you've had two, third choice and a first choice, a favorite. Then another close second choice, basically vied for favoritism, only rewards, Ethan West. This was Indiana, an Indiana bred group. And this four-year-old for Thorough Crowd is the owner's, a Warrior's reward. So you've had three very gettable horses. Then the upset. And whenever there's an odds on that gets beat, that'll exponentially improve the payout. 43-20 if you somehow found Indigo Rich, who was up near the lead under Achard and held on. And then in the nightcap, you had a 11-2 shot, a $12.80 winner for Jim Watkins, an Albertus Maximus mare, five-year-old that he owns, and by the name of Helen May's Song. Rodney Prescott aboard paid $12.80, and that was a fourth choice. So a favorite, basically a co-favorite, a third choice, a fourth choice, and a 20-1 shot. What do you think the pick five paid? $7,400. $7,426. Unbelievable. You've got to look. I mean, I was concentrating on our horse, but and our race, but I Indiana kept flashing up, and so we were watching. There was a 100-1 shot that ran real big, actually, in a maiden race. Graceful Choice for Jay Holden was second to Country Time at 113-1. Yeah, and ran really well. All right, there we go. So there's a couple of minutes. Bill is standing by. Bill Gallo, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
I'm good. And Bill, I was looking for the PPs this morning, and they're not up yet.
Yeah, we just had scratch time. We had only one scratch, so we're going to publish the PPs shortly. Right after I'm in the midst of doing a morning line, and we'll have everything set and ready to go somewhere around noon.
All right. Well, then I'll do some. You can give an overview. You can do kind of an advance piece. We had Guy Torsolieri yesterday, and we kind of went through the history of the difficulty, and you and I have talked about it all year, we. Trying to kind of build things back up. I expressed how badly everybody felt, all the work that Guy was putting in to last year, the 100th meeting. So it's not the 100th meeting that they were hoping for, but as Guy said, Bill is just happy that they're having a meeting.
Yeah, absolutely. It's onward and upward. It's not the same. We haven't gotten back to the 2019 levels where we had much bigger fields and much bigger purses and a little bit more of a presence from Europe. But we're going to get back there. But the fact that they're having the races and the 100-year celebration is a huge plus for us. It's still championship day, no matter how you cut it. Six races, which is one less than we normally have there. But we were inhibited a little bit by total purse money. So just to give you an example, we're running for $400,000 instead of $850,000. And quite frankly, we were on... The goal was to run for, in 2020, we were going to run for $1 million with a $500,000 feature. So we had to pare things back because of COVID, but we're definitely on the road to recovery. And it's a smaller product, but a really good six stakes race product, and I'm really looking forward to it. And, you know, one of the key things is, how is the revenue driven? And, you know, the revenue is really driven not through the parimutuel side. There is betting, but it's somewhat limited. It's really driven through attendance, and guys, Far Hills Meet historically has had enormous crowds, and we've got to build that back up as well. So he's looking forward to a nice day. He's looking forward to a really nice attendance, and that'll springboard us into next year and beyond, and we'll get back to that $1 million mark hopefully in 2 or 3 years.
Well, and that was also guys in a kind of the rosy picture to put on it, and I'm looking forward to getting down Saturday, and certainly the marquee matchup in the Grand National. I suppose to some degree, Snap Decision and the Mean Queen scared some people off, to be honest. But because there are only two others that are gonna wait for the flag. Amschel from Cyril Murphy and Mr. Naylor, and Gordon Elliott, who's got a pair that he's bringing to the U.S. Talk a little bit about what has transpired since last month and the Lonesome Glory result.
Yeah, I mean, the Lonesome Glory result was, a fascinating story. I mean, it started in Saratoga with Kerry Breon and taking over for Shepherd, and we renamed the Turf Riders the Shepherd, and of course she wins it. The Mean Queen comes back and beats Snap's Decision. It was on a big win streak. So the pairing of the two is beyond our wildest dreams. It's, the best, probably the best male horse in the country, and most of our jumpers are males, but Snap Decision is a very, very formidable horse. And going up against the Mean Queen again, it's my job to fill races. I'm shocked that we got four, to tell you the truth, because it's a tough pill to swallow to run against these two at weight for age. That's the significant difference between Saratoga and Belmont. Those grade ones at Saratoga and at Belmont are handicaps, and those horses were giving away weight, which was some of the lesser horses would be inclined to give it a shot. In this case, only two took the challenge. Amschel is going to give it a shot. He did run weight for age at Percy Warner back in June against Snap Decision, and he ran a pretty, pretty significant race. Got beat, like, I don't remember, three or four lengths, but it was a good performance on his part. So this is weight for age again. The filly gets 8 pounds. That's an 8 pound sex allowance, and after September 1, that's a jumping rule that we have. And, as you know, in the flat, it's 5 pounds for fillies before September 1 and 3 pounds thereafter. We give a little bit more for fillies. We give 10 in the early part of the season, then we drop it to 8. So she's getting an 8 pound allowance, which is one more than she got in the handicap at Belmont. Another interesting angle to the race. So you can look at it any way you want. I've heard you say, and others say, Snap Precision was coming off a long layoff. Did the race help him? Probably it did. He ran without Lasix at Belmont. He runs back on Lasix here for the Grand National. Whether that's a factor or not, I don't know. The Mean Queen does not use Lasix, so no change there. But I know there are four in the race, but it's the true matchup is the two horses. Gordon Elliott's going to take a shot when he shipped the horse over. He's the older horse, 8 years old. His recent form isn't spectacular, but he's a highly rated horse. I think he's 153 on the scale, so that puts him up there in our Grade 1 division. He's ridden by Davey Russell, and who's one of the top riders over there in Ireland. Rides a lot for Gordon. Obviously, he didn't ship over. He's going to stay. That horse and the three-year-old that Gordon is shipped over are staying. It's American Connections, Meadow Run at the farm in Maryland, Ben Griswold owned. So both horses, both Chosen Mate and the three-year-old Realist, are going to stay here and race in America. But anyway, getting back to the feature, it's a Grade 1. It's critically important. It's clearly going to decide the Eclipse Championship. And the biggest part is, I think all of this was recognized by NYRA and our with our relationships there. And we've gotten great support from NYRA, great feedback. We are going to be a part of the America's Day at the Races, and we're going to be on Fox 2. The first three races, in fact, the four-year-old stake, the novice stake, and then the Grade 1, which has a post of 234. So those three will be on Fox 2, which is huge for us. Liza Hendricks is the daughter of Ricky Hendricks, and she'll do the live commentary for Fox 2 or for NYRA. So we're looking forward to that. Eric Donovan's going to be there. David O'Rourke, in fact, I believe is coming, which is we appreciate his, attendance. And I know Guy was excited when Dave accepted the invitation. So we're looking forward to the Fox show. We're looking forward to the NYRA executives coming. Hopefully they'll have a great day. You've been there before, and it's pretty spectacular. The setting, the venue, the whole thing is pretty remarkable. Hopefully the weather will hold up. It looks like rain later in the day. I think we'll be done by the time it rains, if it rains at all. So I think the course is in great shape. I just talked to Guy again this morning, sent some additional photographs. They're ready to go. Fences are set. So can't tell you how much we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, I've been monitoring the weather too, and it looked like, sometime by 4:30, 5, 6 o'clock, it might turn, but it'll be well. I think we only go. What's the latest last post?
5:02. So
5:02. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be in good shape. We go from 1:20 to 5:02, so it's a rather small window for our races. But I feel pretty confident. If we get a little rain, that's not the end of the world either. It's a common misconception. If it's raining, it's not more dangerous. It's actually safer in some respects. The horses go a little bit slower, and riders are a little bit more cautious. But on that particular race course, it's a championship race course, which is why we have our championship day there. Not only is the turf beautifully maintained, but the layout is spectacular. It's all hurdle racing. In the past, I've heard you reference it. We used to have a timber race, over post and rail fences. We eliminated that. In fact, in 2019, when the purses were over $800,000 for the day, we actually had a $50,000 mile-and-a-half turf race for the flat horses, which was pretty popular. We had a big field. It ended up being a really nice race. But for 2021, we decided to just come back modestly and put all our focus on the six hurdle stakes. Moving forward, we'll probably add a flat race again, and we'll bump those purses back up to their normal slots and, make it truly, truly a championship day. But, if we're going to have a championship day, we might as well have the two best horses in the country on the racetrack and facing off. So, It should be a lot of fun to watch.
Snap decision in the Mean Queen, and the way this came together was totally organic, and that's what makes it even more special. Let's talk about everything else on the card. The Foxbrook, second most valuable affair on the day, $75,000. Foxbrook champion hurdle, and you got the four-year-old group that starts the day, the Harry Harris. Of course, the three-year-olds, Gladstone ended up, you ended up with a nice group of three-year-olds, including the filly of Leslie Young's Cup of Aiken, and that kind of bodes well for next year, I would think, Bill, to have as many as nine potentially going in the Gladstone.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, just for the audience that's probably not that familiar, our horses, they don't jump until they're three. In fact, they really don't jump until they're the fall season of their three-year-old year. So, this is an important race. There's this restricted three-year-old race here, and then there's one final one on the final day of the season. So, yeah, it's good to see the younger horses get a start. And it leads into that first race that Harry Harris is restricted to four-year-olds. Those are young jumpers, quite frankly. And it's a nice group. It's kind of a mixture. There's winners in there with, I think the first three horses are maidens. Yeah, Turbo Drive, Queen's Empire, and Homer Hayes, they're still maidens. But they're obviously highly thought of by the connections. And they're in against some winners. The most formidable of those is the Kerry Breon horse, first-time starter, U.S. historic heart. He looks real nice on paper. He'll clearly be the betting favorite. But I could see a nice matchup between Historic Heart and Besmachi, the Leslie Young horse. So, nice little race, young horses. Hopefully the future is bright. Those are the types of races that the way our racing goes, the three-year-olds obviously go into the four-year-old season and get a little bit more developed than those four-year-olds, and then eventually five and older, they go into the novice division, which is that second race of the day, that champion, Foxbrook champion hurdle. Those are for novice horses, meaning horses that have not broken their maiden prior to a date, which is a date, first day of the year last spring, or have never won three races, which allows a horse like City Dreamer, who's got plenty of experience but hasn't gotten over the hump and won that third race. So it's once again, it's a nice matchup. You'll see some familiar horses that ran at Saratoga. Horses like French Light from Breon, Booby Trap from Leslie Young, and Ritzy AP from Neil Morris. So good competitive race. I mean, my job is to fill races, and I can't say I'm disappointed about the field size. The field size is about half what they normally would be under normal circumstances. But I've told you before many times, we had a tough year with COVID, and our owners were uncertain about what the future was going to look like, and we're kind of in the rebuilding mode. So that's part of the explanation for the smaller fields. But if you have small fields but they're competitive fields, I think it'll be a good product. I think it'll be a good betting product. It'll be fun. You can bet. If you have a New Jersey account, you can bet through New Jersey Bets, and it's all going to be done telephonically. So we hope that people take advantage of betting on our races. There's not a whole lot of bunch of our races you can't bet on. The parimutuel is illegal, but it does have parimutuel wagering. So as a little, hopefully it'll perk some additional interest. But those are our first three on Fox 2, which is the four-year-old stake, the novice stake, and then followed by the Grand National. And then we close out the card with three other races. One's for is it what we call a ratings handicap. Those are horses. We have a rating system in America, much like they do in England and Ireland. And I have a committee that works for me, and they rate horses. They give them a specific number, and they carry that number. And obviously, the number goes up or down depending on their recent success or failure. And they're slotted into certain numbers. So this is a very high-rated race, a 130 or lower. 130 is the highest rating race we have. Anything below beyond a 130 would be a kind of a grade one type horse. But, once again, an interesting little field of six, but, some nice horses in the race. The highest weight is an imported horse Julie Gamina just brought over. Yeah, Boya. Never seen him, but his form is certainly very good. He clearly justifies his high weight here. And then we go to that three-year-old. By the way, Cup of Aiken was a scratch this morning. That filly did come out, Leslie Young's. So that's the only scratch we had. So that's an eight-horse field of three-year-olds. And I made Realist the morning line favorite, the Gordon Elliott horse. On paper, he looks like the most accomplished. He's certainly the most experienced. Several of them in the race are maidens, but maidens that have started. So we'll see. You never know. Those are the races that you usually see some sort of future stakes-type horse in. And then the last race of the day is a filly stake that has a very small field of four. Guy Torsolari and his committee felt committed to the all-stakes card. We had toyed with not using this race and using a sub-race, but once we got a commitment from all four fillies, they do run uncoupled. Two are owned by Peggy Steinman, and it's it should be a good competitive race. Two of them, Down Royal and Screen Image, ran against each other in what we call the Randy Rouse, which is a filly stake at Colonial back in the summer. So they're back at it with Speed Alert and Eve City added to the mix. So, once again, it should be a fun little race to watch. Good way to conclude the day.
Bill, the three races that are going to be part of the cross country pick five, the Grand National, yeah, the Appleton, and the Gladstone.
That is correct. The third, fourth, and fifth.
Okay.
Bill Longo told me about. I think they're drawing today, and they'll decide,
yeah,
what the two races are, whether it's with Belmont and Keeneland. I'm not quite sure, or maybe two Belmont. I'm not sure. But he did tell me we were races three, four, and five in the cross country pick five.
All right. Well, I mean, certainly everybody's going to use both Snap Decision and Mean Queen to get through the Grand National. They're going to be looking for help clearly in the Appleton and the Gladstone. So we'll get Clancy in tomorrow. Sean will join us, and we'll get some opinions. And I don't think I think his horses are in the first two. Yeah, so he's not going to have any bias on a River D horse, because Queen's Empire is in the Harris and City Dreamer in the Foxbrook. There's nothing more exciting in the world of steeplechase than Clancy winning a race at Far Hills.
Sean is River D stable, for those that don't know, and he's got a nice little stable, nice little syndicate, and he likes to win on the big days for sure. So, and he's got two live horses, no question about it. I know they like the maiden in the four-year-old race, and City Dreamer, I mentioned him earlier, he's got the most experience in that entire field. His recent form isn't great, but on his best day, he certainly could win this.
What kind of I forgot to ask Guy, actually. We got a nice pre-sale and crowd expected, all good on that front.
Yeah, he's guarded in his enthusiasm, but yes, he's looking for a nice crowd, and get back to the old days. And I think you've been there. At its peak, it's quite an event. They jam them in there. They've had as many as 40,000, and I don't think there'll be that many, but it's because of, once again, the spillover from COVID and things like that. But I would think that he'd have a good crowd. 20,000 would be wonderful.
I was going to say 2025. Yeah. That feels like the right number. And Bill, before we go to the last couple of weeks, out to Geneseo, and what do we have left after Saturday?
Well, we're going to the International Gold Cup next Saturday in Virginia, which is one of our premier Virginia meets, and a great way to complement what they're doing at Far Hills Saturday. So that's a big, very popular meet there, just outside of Washington. And the following weekend, we go to Montpelier in Virginia, and concurrently, we run races at the Callaway Gardens and just south of Atlanta. And then there's a small little timber meet at Pennsylvania Hunt Cup the Sunday, the 7th of November. And then we close it out the following Sunday, November 14th, at Charleston. So, there's a lot at stake. We got the Eclipse Championship decided Saturday. We've got the trainers' battle is a great battle with Fisher, and now Neil Morris is in the mix, and Leslie Young and Kerry Breon. And the jockeys, Waters and Garner, battling it out. So there's a lot at stake in the last couple of weeks of the season. So, yeah, we got a fun little game, and we keep clicking along. Certainly appreciate your particular attention to it and you know, considering us a part of Thoroughbred Racing, which we are. We're a tiny sliver of Thoroughbred Racing. Well, some people don't even realize that these horses are Thoroughbreds. They are. Yes, indeed, they are. They all come from the racetrack. But we've got a great group, and we appreciate your support, Steve.
I love it. I loved it right from the first time I went to Saratoga and saw it. I was immediately captivated. Really good, and it's only enhanced. In fact, I've been trying to figure out if I'm always on the lookout to see if one of our horses, as they wrap up a flat career, maybe they can transition over. I've always got that in the back of my mind. So
yeah. Not a bad thing to have, particularly all the movement of second careers and things like that. And,
yep.
You know, I can't stress enough to you how our horsemen take care of their horses, too. Our, you know, jumpers are, you know, they've got quite a life. They live on the farm, for starters. And secondarily, they don't run as often as the flat horses, and they can run for quite some time until you can jump over hurdles until you're 10. And the timber horses go to 12, 13, 14 sometimes. But it's a wonderful life. The horses love it. Ask Carrie Breon. She'll tell you all about how much the horses love doing what they do. But I've been around back in the day. I remember visiting Tom Boss's farm in Moncton, Maryland. If you're a horse, that's where you want to live. And if you want to have a nice life in racing, it's a wonderful way for a horse to participate in racing, that's for sure.
Well, and speaking of elderly thoroughbreds that are still going and participating, did you see that Carl O'Callaghan? Did you see what?
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
You tell everybody what about the about what he's doing with Kinsale King. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, no, that's just another example. You know, you can elongate horses' lives and keep them doing what they like to do. Something these horses are not forced to jump; they actually love it. I saw the Mean Queen schooling right across the street from Fair Hill, and you could just see she was schooling with a stablemate, and you could see how interested she was and how much they enjoy it. And that's just a little schooling session over in the backyard there at Fair Hill. But it's a cool little sport, and it's something a lot of people don't know about, even in the thoroughbred industry. It's we're proud of what we do. I think we do a pretty good job at it. And we've got a wonderful group of horsemen, and we provide a nice lifestyle for horses.
Well, and for those, I'm trying to retweet it, but Carl's got the retweet function off. The other day, Carl competed in New Jersey at a hunt meet, and with him in the irons, Kinsale King wins, and he's I think 16 years old. Kinsale King, because he's 16 years old, and you know, for those of you that haven't heard his name in forever, the Golden Shaheen winner going back to 2010 in that Maidan, and he'd won things like the Underwood at Hollywood and the Palos Verdes and more. I mean, he very accomplished sprinter, and Carl's had him. I'm pretty sure Carl's had him the whole time, since he retired as a racer, which actually was, let's see, 20. He did bring him back after a long layoff, and then he got hurt again. So 2013 was his last race, but here he is 8 years later winning a hunt meet race. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, we restrict our horses. Of course, you know that in New York, the restriction was 10 this year for the first time. We actually let our hurdlers race until they're 12. But it's not uncommon that a horse will stretch out his career that way. But once again, I mentioned it earlier, our horses don't run that frequently. So, I mean, a jumper runs four or five times in a year, six maybe, but, you know, never double digits. It's very, very rare.
Incredible. Incredible. Bill, I will see you on Saturday.
I'm looking forward to it, Steve. Thanks for coming.
Not at all. Still time to make arrangements and come out to the Jersey countryside. It is just a fabulous day of fun and spectacle and eating and drinking and lots of camaraderie. And you got people from the thoroughbred side and the racetrack side. You got the hunt meet crowd. It's just wonderful. Far Hills race.org for all the information. And if you're in the metropolitan area, very easy to get to as well. Let me close out the morning, and it's been an interesting one. Seth Barrow, I think, is standing by.
Good morning. I am. And as you were talking about Kinsale King, I pulled up, and I did not realize this, and according to his Wikipedia page, there's a movie about Kinsale King and his trainer. A 2016 documentary. I went over to IMDb. I have to look this up now. Chasing the Wind.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Sounds like it's kind of fun. Maybe when it came out, I knew about it, but I'd completely forgotten about it. I'm going to have to see if it's streaming out there someplace. Sounds like it's worth a watch.
Absolutely. That's one of the great videos, celebratory videos. And I haven't seen it in a few years, but Carl O'Callaghan running up the stretch as Kinsale King sweeps home to the win at Maidan, and Carl jumping and you've seen that, haven't you?
Yes.
It's so great. It was so great. I can't remember who rode him in that. Actually.
Garrett Gomez.
I was going to say, right? Was it Gogo? I'm going to say Gogo was my lean. So that,
just pulled up the
good job. Good job.
Garrett Gomez, the Golden Shaheen. Yeah.
A couple of things, Seth. We got about 10 or 12 minutes that we can enjoy together, and you know, one at some point. I know Saturdays in the fall, you're going to be, you know, you're on TV, but the one year you should come down to Far Hills.
Oh, I'd love to go. And while you guys were talking, I pulled up the website. And I would tell people who are debating going, just pull up the Far Hill website. And the front page is full of all kind of drone shots. And that's just enough to make you want to go. Big crowds, and it looks like it's a lot of fun. But I'd love to go. Like you, I'm a fan of steeplechase racing to begin with. So I'd love to go down and take advantage of that. As you say, unfortunately, I'm on the air. Maybe we can do a OTV TV road trip sometime. I mean, we do the Florida Derby and the Queen's Plate. Maybe we'll do a Far Hills at some point because, yeah, I would love to go down. And I heard you talking. I would love to also see a DT jumper at some point.
That'd be fun. The one who might have been the right candidate for it, and he got claimed away, the horse I owned with Paul Pompa, Toy Cannon, and he was a Thunder Gulch, and I remember he was a difficult horse, and he would have benefited from the way in which jumpers are trained, meaning in most cases away from the racetrack and out in yards, as it were. At a place like Mr. Naylor's Farm, which is incredible in suburban Maryland outside of the Beltway, Cyril Murphy was nice enough to have me out there one Preakness week, and that would have been good for him. But he got claimed away. Ultimately, he ended up in Puerto Rico, and then we ended up getting him back at the end of his not just his career, but also was a victim during the hurricane, and is now he's out in the field himself with a group of retirees, but he would have been a good candidate for it because he was athletic, and I always thought that he would have been a terrific chaser. But it didn't come together.
That'd be fun, though. See the DP Silks going over the jumps in Saratoga?
Well, see, those I would have. We would have to use the older, and now we've got the new Speed Silks, the Speed Style, that Ryan Daly, the official silk and equipment. I've also got the saddle towels that Ryan Daly makes. Daly family, been in the silks business forever in the Northeast, and does a fabulous job. She's gorgeous. But I would use the older satin ones, the old style. Although I do like the way the new Speed Silks look when it comes to arm color.
I like your design to begin with. Easy to pick out. You guys made a good choice there. Yeah.
Thank you. That was based on two things. The dot pattern was I appropriated from Mrs. Weber, from her famous jacket, the white jacket with the red dots and the black sleeves. But the blue and green comes from the website, the colors of Derby Trail, which is what DT stands for. And the fluorescent idea, Stanley Ettinger, the late Stan Ettinger from Pond Street, when I was designing the silks and putting them in, you got to file them with the Jockey Club. I said to Stan, I said, any suggestions? He said, pick a neon color as the base of the jacket. He said, it's easy for partners to catch the horse and see the horse if it's a
and
neon.
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
So that's why we did the neon green. The line.
When we had Leon this summer, Leon Sadler, he said that's why he went with the pink.
There
you go.
Same thing. Exactly. Yeah, Gary. But although if there's, it's funny. Pink is very popular, and there's some very prominent pink silks, including Gary Barber's. So sometimes the fact there was a Breeders' Cup race. I think it was the Breeders' Cup race a couple of years ago at Santa Anita. I think there were three pink jackets, and two of which were Gary, but with offsetting caps. But there was a bunch of pink jackets, and so sometimes you get a couple too many, and then of course you deal with Windstar. You know, if they've got especially like in the Derby where Windstar's got the white jacket, you know, and there's lots of white anyway. But always a fun topic. Let's get some Keeneland in here. And how you been playing Keeneland, or what have you been up to?
Yeah, I've been looking at Keeneland on the afternoon TV shows. Took Sunday off, though. I had a little cough. I went in for a COVID test, negative. But I a little cold or bronchitis or something. I don't know. So, but it's better today. But I still had handicapped, and I watched it from home on a Sunday. But I was in the studio on Saturday. I don't know. I'm kind of treading water a little bit. When you hit your it's okay. But I feel like I'm treading water a little bit down there.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday,
it's been
Sunday
hard.
Results were, yeah, it was. And it's not that you then look at the winner and say, I never would have had that. It's more you look at the entire race and say, yeah, I could have made a case for six or seven of these. And that's kind of the way it's playing out. On the stakes, what was funny over the weekend in New York, they had the Chad Brown Exacta, and you heard people lamenting, oh, yeah, you hear it at Saratoga every year. There'll be a Todd Pletcher horse that comes in at a big price, or a Chad Brown horse. And how do we not have, you know, Chad Brown at that price, or Todd Pletcher? And in New York, there was the Chad Brown Exacta in the stakes race at a big price. But the kicker was, then people an hour later had another shot and still didn't get the Chad Brown Exacta in the stakes race over at Keeneland. That was, I want to say, in New York it was 100 and something, but at Keeneland it was still about $75, and you already had the hint earlier, and I was on the outside looking in on both of those, however.
We talked to Chad about it yesterday, and I kidded him because he had that Zandon win the maiden fourth at 5-1. And I thought, wow, I said, this is great. We're going to get that's the best price we're going to get on a Chad Brown horse today. And it wasn't even close. the prices kept the fur kept flying. All right, let's look at this pick five. There's one important scratch in this pick five sequence. Storming Lion comes out of the fifth, so it leaves a 5-horse field, and the two horses on the outside that we were monitoring for the Jessamine did not get in. Both Cherie DeVoe's Blissful and Chad's Haughty, neither one. The field of 14 remains intact. You could also take out Mrs. Claus, and Yilkatis came out of the sixth, which means Discreet Kitty runs, and Absolute Chaos has scratched out of the six. So there's the scratches in the pick five. Started off Seth in the fourth. We got about 3.5 minutes.
Well, who came out of the fourth? Did anybody come out of the fourth? That's the one race I didn't get.
No.
Okay, so I had it 6-2-3-9. Excuse me, 6-7-3-9. I had the two written next to the seven. 6-7-3-9. I put Cat's Pajamas on top for Grand Motion. Luis Saez on board. Just number wise seems to match up nicely with this group. Luis Saez is on board, so there was enough there. The race three back attracted my attention up at Saratoga. This horse gets back to that. You know, the numbers since that have gone in the wrong direction, but I think it's been facing some pretty good horses. I'm just going to take a little shot there at a little bit of value. Honor Hop, I'm going to be interested to see how the morning line matches up with the off odds, because I think Honor Hop on the numbers is going to take more action, and maybe deserves to be the favorite and is the one to beat. Certainly off the last few numbers, Brian Lynch, Julian Lepereau is playable. And if the odds hold up, you know, you have to use at least both of those and enjoy it while we can. Mike Maker, Irod Ortiz, again, there's some numbers a little further back that are okay. So for me, again, 6-7-3-9.
I've kind of focused in, frankly, on the entry, Stand Tall and First Course, the Watts Humphrey ownership, one for Rusty and one for his daughter Vicky Oliver, and Honor Hop. And I didn't go much further. I do have Enjoy While We Can and Spank's Legacy, the 3 and the 9, as C's, as on a backup ticket. But I'll go back and look again at Cat's Pajamas. I really didn't, on my passes, I really, nothing there for me. But I'll look back at it, Seth, if you put her on top going the 12 panels. All right. Fifth race, non-winners of two lifetime, going 6.5. These are males.
6-2-4 for me. It's just hard to get past One Fast Cat. It's Wesley Ward, Golden Palette. You know, there was one of my winners at Keeneland the other day, looked good and lived up to it, and I think this one is in the same scenario. If you're looking for an alternative, maybe Violent Pass off the race last time showed some speed against similar over at the Churchill, and Mists of Time coming in from out of town, maybe a little bit of a fresh face, but it's going to be hard to get past One Fast Cat for me. 6-2-4.
Yeah, I 2-6. I hope is going to get us through. There's a couple of little hints on the other three of them, but I'm actually glad Storm and Lion came out. That makes it a little bit easier. That one KP. There's several lines that are just ridiculous. That horse is not 15-1. And, of course, it's going to be less anyway just by the field going from 6-5. But just because that horse came in, I think, what, from Belterra, it doesn't, you know, preclude that he's not competitive. It's just and now we'll talk about, in the Jessamine, we'll talk about an insane line. But the 6, second level allowance going a mile on the grass. Second leg, of, by the way, of the $3 pick 3.
10-5.
Seth, we're going to be out of time here. Jump down to the Jessamine. What'd you do in there?
Oh, I took a little shot in there. Let me just flip my pages quickly. I used in there, I have it 8-3-13-14. I'm not thrilled using the 13 and 14, but their prices are good enough. But I thought Queen Judith off the win at Kentucky, I don't know if that was what you were referring to, but if that morning line holds up, I think that's the crazy price off of Kentucky Downs winner in debut for Mark Cassie. I put that one on top.
Interesting. No, I was talking about the California Angel 30-1, which is just silly. She'll be half that. So we got to pull up, and Seth, we'll watch you on TV later, and thanks.
Appreciate it. I'm not on today. I'm still recuperating, so I'm taking it.
All right, feel better.
Tomorrow.
Very good. Thanks to Dick Powell and Sid Fernando and Bill Gallo and Seth Merrow. Good luck today, everybody. As soon as I can fix this, I will get the plays up at the website. Back tomorrow for the Big Thursday show, and we'll talk to you then. I got to go to Bennington, too, for a haircut. Talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.